Hi, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. Tonight, we're going to do a review of a book. And what we try to do when we do these reviews of books is we try to talk about, summarize some of the content of the book, but really give you an idea about why we like this book. What's the thinking that goes into it? Now, first and foremost, the name of the book tonight is Breaking Up with Sugar, written by Molly Carmel. And first and foremost, Molly's a friend of mine and somebody that I really respect and admire and what she brings to the therapeutic table with her clients. She's somebody that I've gone to when I've needed to consult with somebody in my own personal family and issues that she specializes with. And Molly is open-minded. She brings a lot of various resources and experience. And what you'll find in this story is that Molly brings her own story. I think that that's one of the most compelling things that you can bring to your work is your own story and the wisdom that comes from it. So with that, let's get into it. Why talk about a book about sugar and talking about our diet, although this is not a diet book, I'll be clear, but talk about what we take into our body. It's because we believe and embrace the idea at Evoke Therapy Programs of whole health. We believe in the connection between mind, body, and spirit. We think that what we eat affects and what we do with our body affects how we think and how we feel. And that's reflected in all that we end up doing in our lives, in our mood, our feelings, our anxiety, our behavior. So we come with that idea. Let's talk about Molly's story a little bit. She says, "It never ever occurred to me to call this problem an addiction or to say that I was engaged in an abusive relationship with sugar. But that's exactly what it was. Time and time again, full of hope, I would attempt another diet program. Little did I know, I was bringing a knife to a gunfight. These programs were completely outmatched by my abusive relationship with sugar and the hold that it had on me." So the basic premise is that this is not a diet. This is about looking at and treating sugar and your relationship with it the same way you would with any addiction to a substance, to a recreational drug. It hijacks the brain, and she goes into some of the science. And what it does, more than just having a physiological response, is our thinking. We think like an addict if we're addicted to sugar, if it's a drug to us. Another aspect of Molly's work that's important that I think adds to its quality is this idea that it's not necessarily everybody's story. It's her story. She tells it so honestly in the first person that you don't have to swallow it whole. You can consider it. But I think she makes a pretty compelling case between the parallels between addiction to drugs and alcohol and things that we normally associate with addiction and addiction to sugar. She talks about the shame and the hopelessness of those who battle with food and body and weight issues. And she says it like this: "I know how much pain, shame, isolation, and suffering this relationship has caused you. I know how hopeless and alone you felt. I know because I spent many years feeling this way myself. And now I dedicate my life to helping people who know it all too well. I approach this topic and you with all of my heart and with my commitment to you to change your relationship with food, divorce dieting, and create the very best relationship with yourself." I think it speaks to a philosophy that we talk about Evoke, right? It really, mental health is, in some ways, can be said to learn to have a relationship with your health, with yourself, excuse me. To learn to be present in your own life. And most self-medicating, most symptoms in mental health are an attempt, although it often is unconscious, an attempt not to be present in our own lives, not to be present with ourselves. So the antidote, if you will, is to learn to get in touch, to be present, and to feel. And she talks about this idea in her work. I love, again, the obvious parallel between the thinking in traditional addictions that we think about as traditional addictions and many people's compulsion to consume and to seek out sugar. She says this: one day soon after, I strayed from the food plan Lisa had given me by thoughtlessly grabbing a handful of nuts. My first thought was to head to the convenience store and pick up some ice cream and cookies. I'd gone off the plan, so why not go off in style? I remember thinking to myself, this handful of nuts is certainly not how all this went down. I wonder what would happen if I just got right back on my plan. And I did. Without the big dramatic binge and discouraging crawl back to the next diet, just right back on my plan, business as usual. It is a common thinking of in addiction. For those of you who don't relate to addiction, maybe you have a child that suffers or struggles with addiction and you can't understand it. It is this kind of all or nothing, burn the house down thinking, right? If I've made a little mistake, I might as well throw everything away. I think Molly says it somewhere. I know she says it in the interview that we did on our podcast. She says something, it's like getting a flat tire and then getting out and slashing all of your tires just to make the point more emphatic. And that's an aspect of addicted thinking. I love the concept of willpower and how she talks about it. I think she talks about willpower in a way that helps people that don't understand what it means to surrender. When addicts or those in recovery talk about surrender and the misunderstanding of that phrase for many people, I love what she says about willpower. She says, you might think the answer is more willpower, but it isn't. In fact, willpower is a limited resource. Think about this. Think about this for your own life. Willpower is a limited resource. We use it constantly throughout the day, getting ourselves to work, making big and little decisions, fulfilling our daily obligations, and of course, saying no to the cookies. By the end of the day, we're cued for a break, a reward, but we're wiped and so is our willpower. Now is when we're most likely to break that promise we made to ourselves to quote unquote be good, and we reignite our affair with sugar. I had never really thought of it that way, honestly. I'd never used those words. We all use willpower all day long, every day, to get through our day. I use willpower at my job, listening to clients, talking to my family members, doing paperwork, right? Doing challenging, difficult things that take a lot of energy. That's willpower. I'm using energy, resources, psychological, physiological. So at the end of the day, I don't have much left to give. I'm tapped out. And because, like she says, willpower is a limited resource, I'm exhausted. I've exhausted all of my resources. She says, sugar, like other drugs, floods the brain with dopamine, a neurotransmitter responsible for wanting and liking. While dopamine does lead us to feel good, it mostly leads us to seek out wanting. So it's really not that different when you think about it. You mean all drugs do is trigger a chemical reaction in the brain that gives us a sense of well-being or peace and relaxation or excitement and thrill. That's all it is. And that's what sugar does. And so while we might not think of sugar as dangerous and doesn't have the immediate consequences that substances can have, right? It's kind of a slow death, if you will. It's triggering the brain in some of the exact same ways that drugs that we all know to be harmful, would common sense would tell us that they're harmful. It affects the brain in the same way, and we can become dependent on them and go through withdrawals. I have this quote here. Alcohol soothed me, somebody said. It helped me unwind after a long day. Alcohol was the fun at the party. It was an integral part of my social life. Everyone drinks too much from time to time, right? Well, really, it's a quote from Molly's book, substituting the word alcohol for sugar. The real quote goes like this. Sugar soothed me. It helped me unwind after a long day. Sugar was the fun at the party. It was an integral part of my social life. Everybody overeats. Everyone overeats from time to time, right? So it's the same kind of core thinking. when I was talking to Molly, and if you're interested, the podcast right before this one was an interview I did with Molly earlier this week in preparation for this. When I talked to her about it, one of the questions I asked was, why is this going to be any different than other books, other ideas, other quote-unquote diets that people have tried? And she makes a big point to say, of course, it's not a diet. It's recovery from an addiction. And she said, Brad, I think that's all I want people to know about my book, about this plan, is that it is different. It's not about restricting, right? There are, of course, there are things that we can't consume, but it's not about going hungry. It's about a plan of recovery from a substance that hijacks the brain, hijacks our thinking, distorts our thinking. And she calls it an abusive relationship. I think a lot of people, I talk about relationship with things all the time, right? I think it's just a better way to understand the complexity of how we respond to certain things in our life. So I talk about our relationship with our child's issues, with their depression, with their anxiety, with their addiction. What's our relationship to that? What's our relationship with food? What's our relationship to sugar? And as we think about it in those terms, it takes on a life of its own, right? It becomes three-dimensional. She says, the same way that a lot of addicts to substances would say, she said, I thought sugar was my solution when all along it was really my problem. It controlled me in ways I was simply unable to see. And when I could see it, I thought I might die if I had to end my relationship with sugar. I remember when I was 16 in a treatment center. And the therapist let me know that my mother was essentially going to take a zero tolerance policy with drugs. They were not going to be tolerated in our house. And I had a reaction to that line being drawn in the sand. And my therapist says, it's like you just lost your best friend, isn't it? And I thought, it feels a lot like that. It feels like I lost somebody that I went to, that I relied on, that I derived comfort from, that I escaped to. Sugar became my great love. That's where our relationship truly began. Sugar was my go-to, to soothe, to numb, to feel included, for fun, for enjoyment, for excitement, for passion, for nurturing. And unlike some of the players of my tumultuous childhood, sugar always showed up for me. It was reliable and never let me down. I mean, that's the draw of chemicals. It's the same thing, is that we know what we're going to get from it. We know that the feeling it's going to give us. Now we need to do more and more of it to get it. And we become dependent on it so that our baseline of kind of life satisfaction, of mood, is lower and lower over time. We need that thing to give us that sense of peace, well-being, what I like to call a sense of okayness. And sugar can do that for us too. So Molly's whole idea is, it doesn't matter. I mean, she talks about quantity. We'll talk about that tonight. She talks about quantity. But if that becomes the focus, if we don't understand that this insidious thing, sugar, that creeps into our diet, can throw us off the plan, we might never have success with developing a practice of healthy eating and a healthy relationship with food. You know, it's like you can't, for a lot of people, they can't, it doesn't matter how much therapy they have. If they are drinking, there's going to be problems. If they are drugging, there are going to be problems. Some people are just like that. And some of us might be that way with sugar. She introduces a scale, a Yale Food and Addiction Scale, to see where you measure on that. So if you're interested in that, you can go to www.fastlab.psych.isa. Well, you can go to Yale Food Addiction Scale. Just Google Yale Food Addiction Scale or buy her book, better than that, and find the link, because it's quite a long one. I posted them here for those of you that are watching live on the webinars, and I'm not going to go over all of them, but you just rate yourself on questions like, I find that when I start eating certain foods, I end up eating much more than I planned. I find myself continuing to consume certain foods even though I am no longer hungry, and you rate yourself on a 0 to 4. And then you come up with a score, and it gives you a sense about where you fit on the scale. And I think a lot of us might be surprised to find out how high we rate on that scale. You know, food is a socially acceptable, self-medicating substance in our society, right? It's legal. Many of us do it. Some do it in moderation, gracefully, seemingly, and some don't. Some it becomes an obsession. It becomes an addiction. I love what Molly talks about. I mean, this goes back to all that we talk about. It's very important how we talk to ourselves. And so she has a section on watching your language. Look at the stories, the things that you say about yourself, the shameful messages you use for yourself, the self-fulfilling language, the hyperbole, the exaggerations, the catastrophizing, the all or nothing. Be aware of that thought process, because that's part of the addiction cycle, right? It's the same thing when we're treating an addict in our program in the field. We're talking to them as much about their addictive thinking as anything, right? That is the monster that gets fed. Her program asks you to begin with a 66-day program, right? This is not a random number. She's taken the research about developing habits. She's done a math equation with it, and she's come up with 66-day. And she calls, and she talks about taking certain vows. Number one, vow number one is to keep an open mind, to be learning and open to the process. Again, it's more of a focus on the thought process than the behavior, because those two are inextricably linked. A vow to be sugar-free, and she gives some details about what that means. And she has the fifth ingredient rule, where if something is listed on a package and its sugar is 5, the fifth ingredient or later, then it's okay to eat. I won't go into detail, and she's sorry to break the bad news, but she talks about being grain flour-free, right? And she shares the science, the nutrition science, about not only what sugar does to us, but how grain flour basically breaks down and gets digested, and we react the same way to it that we do to sugar. Be mindful of volume. Now, in her model, and for those like Molly, going sugar-free will make that challenge a lot easier, along with the idea of eating every 3 to 4.5 hours. Right? That we know that. We know that people that try dieting go through extended periods of restriction, right? It gives them a sense of control and euphoria, but it often leads to a break. We know what happens to blood sugar when it spikes and when it drops too low. We know how people think, how they're taxed, their thinking is compromised. We know all of that. So eating 3 to 4.5 hours, to be a planner, to plan ahead, and then to weigh yourself in a loving and accountable way. So she outlines all of this in her book and plan. I talked about the fifth ingredient rule. Her rule is, if sugar or one of its plentiful aliases or flour are listed as the fifth ingredient or later, that food has the green light. It's a very simple way. And she talks about all the aliases of sugar. And she also talks about artificial sweeteners, because the brain responds to them in the same ways. Then there's lots of research to show that people who substitute sugar with sweetener substitutes end up behaving, responding to diet and nutrition in the exact same way. She invites a new thinking, calorie conscious, not calorie counting. Just like not all the carbs are created equal, neither are all the calories. You need to upgrade your operating system if you're still living by the old school nutrition idea of calories in, calories out. Boy, do I wish that was that simple, right? So again, like a lot of what we teach, it's not a an outside-in job. It's an inside-out job. Now it's going to be augmented by the things that she asks you to practice and the skills that she gives you. But she does two things here that I think are wonderful. She really makes a compelling case for why sugar is essentially acting like a drug in our lives. She tells her story, even some things. She talked about having bypass surgery and how in the eating disordered world, that's an absolute taboo. And she shares that story, decides to tell that. And talked about what an ultimate failure and how shameful and desperate that made her. I remember the first time I met Molly, I talked about this in our interview. I didn't know all of this about her, and we were at a professional event together, and we had a restaurant. I think I was watching her order, or maybe I was ordering for the table. I'm not sure what it was, but somehow the discussion came up, and I asked her something about her challenge with ordering. She was being very deliberate, and she said, "I'm addicted to everything, right? I'm an addict." And she said it without shame. She said it without it feeling like she was putting herself in a box. She was basically taking responsibility for something she needed to be mindful of. That's all it is, folks. It's the same with us as parents. These ideas that we incorporate into our lives when we become aware of our anxiety, for example, when we become aware of our control, our fear, and how it drives us. We're not putting ourselves in a box. We're saying, I need to be mindful. I need to watch that. I need to embrace that. If I don't, it's going to sneak up behind me. She talks about relapse quite a bit and the dreadful cycle that it is for many people. She talks about how cravings are not commands. And she encourages us. I mean, this is at the core of every recovery program, including codependency, to feel our feelings. She says sugar management of sugar is not a skill, right? It's not something, like I said before, that you can willfully decide. You have to do other things around it. So much of us, we think about the problematic behavior. In this case, we'll talk about overeating. And we focus on what not to do. What you will find, I think this might be consistent across the board, is that effective programs to help people don't emphasize what not to do. That's in there. But the emphasis is on what to do and the kind of thinking that we need to incorporate as we approach the challenge. She said the only expectation you can have of a skill is that it helps you tolerate the moment without making it worse. Right? Taking a drink, right? Having something sweet is not a skill. A skill allows you to tolerate the moment without making it worse. And then, of course, if nothing changes, nothing changes. It's a radical idea, an invitation, one I've not heard spelled out so articulately before. It's given from and by a really deep, spiritual and profound woman therapist. Right? She offers all of herself to us in the book. And if it's something, if you've been challenged with this, or you want to understand maybe somebody in your life that's challenged with this, take a look at this book with the idea that it might be, no pun intended, the missing ingredient in somebody's battle with weight and body and food issues. She says it's important that we understand our resistance and roll with it, right? That we embrace it, that we not be afraid of it. It's a new thinking, like I said. And for her, she said this to me in the interview, the only thing that matters, almost, she said, the only thing that matters is that people understand that this is something different. It's shallow, meaning it works on the skills and the tools and the meal plan, right? It treats the behavior at the surface. It's shallow and it's deep at the same time. It goes back to our trauma. But remember, like I said before, there are people alcoholics and drug addicts who it does not matter how much therapy they had, if they drink, it's going to be a problem. And it's for them to figure out. We can observe. We can decide to have opinions about them if we want. But it is really between them and them. Between them and the substance. So she traces it back, but it doesn't rely completely on insight. She talks about being kind to yourself. On our conversation, I was talking about this middle path or middle way that is borrowed from Buddhism, that Marsha Linehan, who developed DBT, borrowed and inserted into dialectical behavioral therapy, and a lot of therapies use this middle path. And when I was talking to her about this middle path, she laughed and she said, "Isn't it always the answer, Brad?" She said to me, she said, "You know, people that come at you with one way, run away." She has lots of slogans. You know, she's been around recovery groups for a while. So for her, it's about finding this middle path, this alternative, this gray area, and learning to live in it. She talks about how perfect is the enemy of good. She said that during her interview. And that this is not a diet. You know, this is not you giving up alcohol for January or October. This is realizing that you have a problematic relationship with alcohol and you're going to have to find your way into recovery. And part of your recovery is going to be that you can't drink, can't have one drink. Right? That's what alcoholics know about themselves, is that one drink can ruin it all. So it's not a diet. It's a great book. I think it's a great book. Again, it's not the usual topic that we talk about, but I think because it encompasses, it embraces so many of the ideas that we talk about at Evoke, and because some of you might have somebody in your life, maybe you have a problematic relationship with food and your body, this is a fantastic alternative, right? Something different than trying just the same old thing every time. I'll get to any live questions. I'll just go over our updates. I'm going to be in New York City on Monday, January 27th at 7 p.m. and in Southern California, Sunday, April 5th. So for any information or to RSVP, please email kaysha@evoketherapy.com. That's kaysha@evoketherapy.com. We ask all current parents to go to a parent workshop. The next one is January 25th at our Southern Utah program. Ask your Evoke therapist if that could be combined, if the timing is right for that to be combined with a field visit to visit your child. Again, RSVP or contact kaysha@evoketherapy.com, K-A-Y-S-H-A. If you want to do a deeper dive, and these are starting to fill up now, February is full. March is filling up, close to full. So we might get to the point where we're going to do 2 intensives per month, which we'd be excited to do. So the next opening is March 4th through 8th. And I'm actually running that one. I'm running the one in March. I'll be in England March 8th through 10th. By the way, there's a Southern California date we're going to open up, a shortened version of this. And then Finding You Too. If you've been to an intensive before, been to Finding You Too could be a way for you to revisit your work. For those of you who have come, it's one of my favorite things to be at and to watch and to be a witness to. We have customized intensives for couples, families, and professionals. Contact us on our website or email us at intensives@evoketherapy.com. Our pursuit trips are outdoor adventure trips all over the world, 3 to 30 days. Think sober fun or therapy light. It could be families, young adults, small groups, couples. We ask all parents to attend 6 12-step support groups just to get their feet wet, just to feel what it's like. Any combination of Al-Anon, Codependence Anonymous, or Families Anonymous. Also, adultchildren.org might be right for you if you feel like you grew up in an alcoholic home or a toxic home. Alateen is for teenagers. RefugeRecovery.org is a place to go to find about groups that are Buddhist-inspired, less of an emphasis on a higher power. And then the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org, is a great place to go to for local classes and resources in your area. Please follow us on social media. Our podcasts, by the way, we just went over 500,000, over 500,000, and it's accelerating. We're getting about 2,000 listens a day averaging a little bit more than that. So please go there, listen to all of these, subscribe, share, love to get the word out. These are available on your iPhone or iOS device using the podcast app, or on your Android devices using the SoundCloud app, or going to soundcloud.com. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find Evoke Therapy Programs using the handle @EvokeTherapy, or the Evoke Intensives program on Instagram using Evoke Therapy Intensives. On Facebook, you can find us by searching Evoke Therapy Programs, or the Alumni Foundation on Facebook by searching Evoke Family Foundation. Our blog, we just had 3 new blogs come out. My new book will be out in about 3 weeks. I'll set a date here in the next couple of days for when I know that it's going to come out. The next book, the first book is The Journey of the Heroic Parent, and the second book, The Audacity to Be You, Learning to Love Your Horrible Rotten Self, out soon. Both will be available on Amazon. The first one already is, the second one out soon. Any live questions that have come in? Doesn't look like I've have any yet. All right, I don't have. I'll announce. I'll send out an announcement tomorrow for our next session. I'm gonna do a Q&A probably next, and then I'm gonna do another Harriet Lerner book, The Dance of Connection. And what I understand is that's Harriet's husband's, Steve Lerner, his favorite book. So I'm gonna be sharing that next. So that's coming up next. Thank you for joining us on the webinar or the podcast. I hope this was helpful to you and interesting to you. I hope all of these can be helpful resources to you. Thank you on behalf of your children and your loved ones for the work that you're willing to do, the heroic journey that you're willing to take inward. It is something that makes not just a difference in your life, but in their lives. I'll talk to you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.